Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrer.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
We're going to do a slight preview of what we're going to talk about today. We are going to talk about D-Day this week. We're going to talk about the Trump verdict, about some of the funding in our local school committee, the Israeli attempt at a peace treaty, which wasn't really from Israel, Biden's border policy, the tapes of the interview with Special Prosecutor Robert Hur and Biden, the Hunter Biden trial, student loans, Fannygate, and Poopgate.
So, and I hope we can get through all that in an hour.
I do too.
Yeah, I don't think we can, but let's give it a try.
Go ahead, Pat.
Oh, am I doing Poopgate first?
You're doing Poopgate.
Oh, yay. Okay.
You start at the bottom and work our way up.
I got this little gem offline this morning. Fed's multi-million dollar poop picking program expanding has international ambitions. The U.S. government is expanding its program to collect poop and thinks picking through the nation's feces is key to ensuring national security by helping officials spot and stop the next pandemic. The traveler-based genomic surveillance program is expanding efforts at airports to detect more pathogens and increase its government spending.
Those are the key words, aren't they?
It's funding. Sorry. The program's director says a supranational governing body is needed to coordinate poop collectors worldwide. You know, they could just throw our money away with both hands instead of increasing funding for poop collectors.
The whole thing stinks to me.
Now, just to add an aside on that, when we lived in Massachusetts, the town of Attleboro, right nearby, sold their sewage waste to refineries because they were processing a lot of jewelry stuff there. Their sewage waste was worth an awful lot because there was a lot of gold and silver in the waste. So there might be areas where this could be profitable, but maybe not.
For pathogens, not gold and silver. Gross.
No, they're starting with the gold and silver. Okay.
Let's go to Fannygate.
Okay, this is short. Fannygate. We were waiting to find out what was going to happen once the proponent of that motion to excuse her had asked the Georgia Court of Appeals to hear his appeal. The Court of Appeal agreed to hear it, and they've set the hearing for October 4th, which means there's not going to be a trial before Election Day. That's my fanny game.
Not a Georgia trial, anyway.
No.
Yeah.
Now, let's talk about the verdict on the Trump trial. Now, Pat, you're the lawyer. You understand this better than we do.
I've been reading all the stories. There have been multiple stories written about how this thing's going to fail on appeal. And there's so many grounds for appeal. One of the articles said, "How shall we count thee?" There are a lot of people that say, can you name what he was convicted of? Can you, Bob?
No, I cannot.
Can anybody on this panel tell me what he was convicted of?
I can't even name.
What? He's guilty just because he's alive.
Okay.
Just because he exists.
And nobody can name what he was charged with versus convicted of.
He's guilty of being Donald Trump.
Exactly. But other than that, you can't tell me what crime he was committed of.
And
Glenn looks like he's leaning forward. Glenn, can you tell me?
No, I just know that he has the opportunity to be convicted of several things that are different from the 12 jurors, because they just had to pick one off a menu of what he really should have been charged with.
Yeah, and if you saw...
Not unanimity...
I was going to say, and the justice, rather than requiring a unanimous guilty verdict in a felony, said, you know, just if I get enough people,
pick one.
Pick one.
Here's three. Pick one. Well, that's illegal. So it's going to fail on those grounds.
And I think that, they knew that it would, from the very beginning, that it would get overturned in an appeal, but I don't think that they care about that. They just want this as an election deterrent.
They just want to be able to call him a convicted felon.
And you see that. You see that with, I have a lot of liberal friends on my Facebook feed who say things like, how could anyone vote for a convicted felon for president? And that's going to be the campaign cry.
Oh, really? How about an unindicted co-conspirator, which is Biden?
Well, I think the whole thing appears to be backfiring on the Democrats. Now, they were successful with keeping Trump off the campaign trail for, what, six, seven weeks. So that was, they could write that as a success. But the reaction to the verdict from the Trump campaign's standpoint was very positive. They collected, over $100 million within, a short period of time.
Well,
what I heard, it was
the website crashed.
Yeah, there were so many people. And I believe they reported that 30% of the donations were from people who had never donated for Trump before. So that indicates that if that is the case, then there are people either getting more motivated who weren't motivated before, or perhaps there are some of these independents or Democrats that are really still love the country that are starting to see the reality of what we're dealing with.
And I think it's important to note that the people who disagreed with the verdict didn't burn down a thing, and they didn't riot in the streets.
There was a cartoon posted up at townhall.com on Sunday. It's a political cartoon, and you have Biden addressing the press and saying, what does it say about the Republicans that their presidential candidate is a convicted felon? And you have the press replying, what does it say about the Democrats that their presidential candidate is trailing in the polls to a convicted felon?
But
they want the title. They want the name.
Well, Babylon Bee, of course, needed to add to it, too, and that they're trying to push in Washington, D.C., to remove Nelson Mandela's statue from Washington, D.C., because he's a convicted felon.
You know Babylon Bee is satire.
Of course.
Just checking. I read a satire site today that said Biden was committing bankruptcy because he couldn't afford his son's legal bills anymore. And that he was so broke, he couldn't afford different kinds of ice cream, and they were down to vanilla at the White House.
Well, you mentioned a minute ago that there were no uprisings, no violent demonstrations, whatever. However, it's going to be interesting to see when this conflicted judge, Mershon, comes out with his sentence, because that's just a few days before the convention. And there's all kinds of possibilities. I hear these talking heads saying, he's not going to give him prison time, he's not going to do this. I don't believe any of that. I put nothing beyond what the Democrats would do. Nothing.
I think that's where
we have to look at it.
They were looking at a year at Rikers and then 5 years probation. That was supposed to be a leak out of Alvin Bragg's office.
And Rikers is where Jeffrey Epstein, quote unquote, committed suicide.
And what's troubling to me is not just the specifics of what they did to Trump, but what this reflects for Democrats. To me, this reflects a total lack of belief in the Constitution. In other words, the basis of this republic is that the people have the right to vote and select their leaders. That's the basis of our republic. And what they're doing by trying to attack their opponent, they're trying to take away our ability to exercise our right to vote. That's what it boils down to. All the rest are the particular ways they get to it.
Right.
But what they are attacking is the basic element of what our country stands for. And if we lose that, the rest of it's gone.
Well, and what's ironic is the whole case is about election interference on Trump's part. But the whole case is about election interference on the liberal Democrat.
But it's different when they do it.
I want to go back to Pat when she's talking about the appeals process. That
The Supreme Court passed or issued an opinion called Buckley versus Valeo in 1976 and said campaign expenditure limits were ruled to be flatly unconstitutional as a violation of the First Amendment's protection of freedom of speech. The limits that it did recognize are significantly higher than the $130,000 that Trump is alleged to have spent as a campaign contribution. Under federal campaign election laws, paying off a non-disclosure agreement to avoid bad information during an election is not illegal. Nothing he did as a consequence of federal laws. Number one, the state doesn't have the authority to try federal laws. And so when Mershan gave the jury, you got three choices here to convict him. Either he violated tax laws by hiding what his payments were from the IRS. IRS is federal. He violated the federal election law, which is federal. And what was the third one? What was the third choice he was given? They were given. I can't remember right off my head. And he also told them, you don't have to be unanimous. You can pick one. So when the jury sheet came back, it had a list of the checks and the amounts of the checks, and the jury just picked guilty, 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 guilty. But they weren't required to say which basis did they find him guilty on. So there's no unanimity, which is required. And even in a conspiracy case, the Supreme Court said the conspiracy, the crime that you're conspiring to commit, has to be unanimous in a jury trial.
What about Paula Jones getting paid off from Bill Clinton? Wasn't that the same thing? Wasn't that a political expense as well?
Yep.
That was.
We'll be right back.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is the CCT8 Wake Up Call Show.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, a photographer, someone that ran their own business, someone retired from the military. Just people in the community that love this country and have a desire to do their part to lower taxes and shrink government, to protect individual liberty, and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. We welcome you to come out to a meeting. If you like what you see and hear, there's a place where you can contribute to the cause. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. The group meets every third Tuesday at Stanley Hall Ballroom in downtown New Bern to enjoy a fantastic speaker and report on CCTA activity since the last meeting. If you've been disappointed with rising taxes and government intrusion, don't just complain. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Pat, you had some more you wanted to bring up?
I just wanted to point out that Trump has been encouraged to, and he says he has, reached out to the U.S. Supreme Court to handle an appeal. Now, in a state conviction like this is, it's a New York state conviction, usually you can only appeal it to the state Supreme Court. That's where you end. You go to the Court of Appeals, you lose there, you go to the state Supreme Court, you lose there, you're done. It goes back to the trial court for imposition of sentence, unless the sentence is already being served. But there is a way to get to federal court, and that is if there's a federal issue, a federal constitutional issue involved in your case. And in this case, there are at least two. Maybe more, but at least two. One is First Amendment. The Supreme Court has held that you can spend your money on your campaign. It's not illegal. $130,000, not illegal. The Federal Election Commission has held that it's not illegal. That's just for reference there. And the Sixth Amendment, you have a right to know what the charges are against you. Not one of three, take your pick. The 1-4-1-4-1-4 rule, the Supreme Court has held that if you are being tried for conspiracy, the crime that you are conspiring to commit has to be named and the jury has to be unanimous on it.
And it has to be named in your indictment,
yes.
Correct?
Yes. So Merchan knew. I mean, unless he's a total idiot.
Well, he
knew.
He was apparently brought up in Colombia, so we're playing by Colombia rules, not by U.S. rules, I believe.
Well, he did so much wrong in that trial. I think he just did it on purpose. He didn't really care. They just needed a conviction, and they got one.
Well, you know, like you're saying, Pat, that if you look at this from the standpoint of what the U.S. Supreme Court can do, and what issues are relevant to federal level issues. Nothing more important, in my opinion, than the rights of voters to select their presidential candidate. That's what's being attacked here. That's what's being interfered with. And if we can't rely on a U.S. Supreme Court to preserve the integrity of the voter process, then they need to pack up and go home somewhere, in my opinion. The other thing is you're talking about fighting back. I did hear that there were is a group of U.S. senators, starting with Mike Lee, Tommy Tuberville, and several others, who have gotten together, and they're trying to form an opposition and a reaction to what the Democrats are doing by doing two things. Number one, refusing to cooperate on any legislation, period. Any legislation Democrats put against, they're going to oppose. The second thing is they're going to vote against any nominee or any person that's put forward for office, be it a judgeship or whatever. And that would stop because I think in some of those you have to have 67% on some of those appointees. So that's two things that they're trying. And that I like to see that because that's a way of fighting back. We can't just go along with, compromising. It is time to fight. They play dirty, that we play dirty. If they bring a knife, we bring a gun. That's just the way it
is. All right, Obama.
Can we go from here?
Wait a minute, Mary. One of the judicial nominees that Biden has put forward, I read this morning, she is unable to answer whether or not your sex is determined by chromosomes because she's not qualified. She can't answer that question.
Can we contrast what we were just talking about with the trial that's going on now of Hunter Biden.
The one that's going on in Delaware, the home of all of the Biden task force, I guess, is what you would call it. We're not sure.
That are showing up and glaring at the jury.
Yeah. Can we talk about witness tampering?
Well, I think that this is going to put an exclamation point behind the double standards and double two-tier system of justice. I think they will do everything in their power to be sure that Hunter is found innocent. And
I don't know. I read some of his defenses that his lawyer's putting forward, and they're just laughable.
Well, the one where he said he was in denial?
Yeah. He's not an addict, so when he said he's
right,
not an addict,
he's
in denial.
But we're talking about a jury here. So, I mean, jury found Trump guilty. They're even with compelling evidence against Hunter, they will find him innocent because that's their agenda.
Well, there's another thing, too, that I heard mentioned by a fairly well-known commentary a week or so ago who said, wouldn't it be interesting if they found Hunter guilty and Biden pardoned Trump and Hunter at the same time?
Well, there's a belief that the president can't pardon a state conviction.
Well, is the gun thing is a federal?
No, you said Trump.
So that's considered, even though there are federal things involved?
It's a state conviction.
Oh, okay.
But there was an argument this morning I read that perhaps if Trump gets elected and wants to pardon himself, that he can go ahead and pardon himself from the New York conviction anyway. But it was kind of an iffy thing.
Does anyone really believe that regardless of what he did and didn't or didn't do, that Hunter Biden will actually be found guilty?
No, I don't.
I think he will, but I don't think he'll serve any time. And I think his dad will just pardon him.
Well, the laptop is very interesting. The laptop's been introduced as evidence.
And the FBI agent said it was real.
Yes.
Not foreign. Russian disinformation.
And not 51, right. What was it, 51 agents of the intelligence
agents. And there are also things on that laptop that are illegal that he could be charged with other than the gun possession.
And nothing to say about the election interference that caused to Trump in the debate where Biden held up the letter with the 51 mm-hmm. signatures. That harmed Trump, and it was lies.
Yes.
I think that one of the issues that's going to be decided is whether when he signed that form, apparently the form says, are you now addicted to drugs, kind of referencing the present. And his defense appears to be, I wasn't at that time, even though I had been previously. I think that's the issue, one of the issues they're trying to make.
But they bought bank records.
Yeah.
Not only that, they had testimony of his ex-wife. And he says that he apparently filed this request to get this gun purchase, was in 2018, I believe. And he's saying that. But his ex-wife has testified that she had to go to his car when he came to see the kids and inspect. She'd go to his car and make sure there weren't any drugs in. That was 2019. So the date has something to do with his defense. I think they're trying to come out and say his defense is going to be, well, he used to be a drug addict. That's all documented. But at the time that he completed the form, he wasn't.
No, the charge is possession of drugs or user of drugs, not an addict.
Well, user then, whatever. But the point is, it's the time.
He had cocaine in the bag with the gun.
Yeah, but, I know that. I'm just saying.
That kind of takes care of it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, cocaine in the White House didn't matter either, so let's... Mm.
No.
Now, I do know that there was a report of apparently a phone record of the president within days of this form, the president or the former vice president saying to his son, you need help on this.
Yes. Proving that he was addicted and he was doing drugs at that time.
Yeah, there's a lot. There's and a again, lot those, of circumstantial evidence.
As you're
evidence
saying, they're yeah,
that
subjective.
That was going on. I want to take a minute and talk about the tapes of the Biden interview with Special Prosecutor Robert Hur. Now, the transcript of those tapes has been released. You can read it online various places. But the actual audio of the tapes has recently been classified as highly classified material that no one is allowed to see.
Here,
that's what I meant. And when Judicial Watch sued, they evidently found out, I don't know exactly how this worked, that the tapes had been altered. This is supposedly a presidential record, and it's illegal to...
The tapes altered or the documentation?
I'm sorry,
documentation.
The transcript had been altered. Yeah. This is a presidential record. It is illegal to alter it, and yet nobody seems to be particularly upset about this. Any comments?
I'm thinking about Nixon in Whitewater and a tape that was missing some
Clinton
minutes.
Was Whitewater. Nixon was Watergate.
Watergate.
It had water in it.
It's water. That's right. That's right.
And that was, what was that, 18 and a half minutes of missing tape?
Yeah.
Well, I think that this whole thing shows how poorly he must have been performing in when he was being interviewed, that they would go to such lengths to prevent that from being made open to the made public. And, just they continue to want to hide his dementia, continue to want to hide his inability to actually function. And it must, the people in the country must see that. Now, some people may think, well, his policies are, I'll put up with that. If I could. But this is scary, especially when the rest of the world sees this. You have other people that are our adversaries. They're seeing that we have a totally incompetent leader. And then some of these decisions he's making are just totally difficult to understand. And now he's pressuring Israel. I think we want to talk about that.
Well,
we've all heard the old adage that in discussion, it's better to remain silent and be thought a fool than to speak and remove all doubt. If the release of these tapes would remove all doubt of the condition of this
now,
person.
Now, we're not going to go into this right now, but you talk about our foreign allies and adversaries watching this. It's interesting that about a month ago, former President Obama made a visit to 10 Downing Street and was talking to the British. And we could wonder about who was actually running our country. When we get back, we're going to talk about the peace treaty.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This is a CCTA Wake Up Call show.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business, it's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free, weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. This is a CCTA wake-up call show. Mary, you were taking us to, I think, something going on with a change in heart with the border.
Yes, it seems like President Biden has changed his mind. He's decided that maybe, after all, he does have the ability to actually close the border. But when you look at it, he's not really closing the border. This is an executive order that essentially allows 2,500 illegal immigrants to come through the border every day.
Without being challenged, yeah.
Yeah, and if it doesn't exceed that, we just let it go at that.
And how are the counters at all the multiple different locations of intrusion going to do that? Are they each going to have a ticker tape going, or how are they planning on doing this?
I don't know.
You know, like in COVID, where you had the person at the entrance to the store with the clicker, where they were...
Yeah. It's not closing the border.
He's governing like a king. You know, I just give an order, I wave my wand, and all right, 2,500 people. What he should have done is say, from now on, for this day forward, we're going to enforce federal law, period. Federal law.
Well, he doesn't want to enforce federal law.
I know.
He wants open borders. He always has.
I know. He
would rather.
And so
his goal.
Governed by executive order, which does not have the force of law.
And this is. Yeah.
Well, if you look at it, the visual that shows up on TV, the one side says, here's what we're doing, and here's the loopholes to get the folks in, and the loopholes are bigger than the original statement of the control.
All he had to do when he took office, the first thing he did was undo all of Trump's border policy, which had kept the border under control. All he had to do was put those things back, and we would be fine. But that's exactly what he didn't want to do.
And the only reason he's doing this is because he realizes this is one of the top issues against him in the election. That's the only reason he's doing this. This is total self-serving. And the other thing, just to reinforce what you were saying, Glenn, I did a little addition here and multiplication. And if you look at the amount of people that would come in under his new proposal. This is supposed to be restricting things. This is what it adds up to. $2,500, 2,500 people a day, that's 925,000 people a year. Okay, that's almost a million people right there. Second thing, there's another category of people brought in by CBP something or other. That's 511,000. That's $1,400 a day. I mean, 1,400 people a day. And that's in addition to the 2,500. So it's just one of those loopholes.
Yeah.
So now you got 925,000, you got 511,000, plus the CNHV, whoever they are, they have asylum people that they, I think that's people coming in, being flown in, that they'll come over
the
border.
That's what I was going to ask.
And that's $30,000. That's 30,000 people a month. And that's 360,000. You add that up, it comes to 1.8 million people illegal a year. And that's what he's proposing as closing or restricting the border. I mean, and people have to realize this is all a big lie.
We can't assimilate that kind of numbers.
And I believe he also somewhere said that he was not going to challenge anyone bringing in a minor.
Yeah, there's another exception.
It's another exception.
So why a minor?
So
that's what
let's,
the cartels do by yeah, a minor.
Let's enable human trafficking while we're at it.
There was a segment on one of the Fox News things about the cost of these illegals in specific cities, and New York was one of them, and then there was a place in California. But the amount of money that I think it was California, they wanted to give all of the illegals guaranteed government-paid jobs, and they were giving them prepaid debit cards. Mm-hmm. And I want to know why the people of these states aren't upset.
Some of them are.
Not enough of them, because they're continuing
Chicago,
to like these people.
Chicago minorities are threatening to vote for Trump.
You know, Trump, ooh, when Trump had his rally there in New York, up in the Bronx, he got a turnout that was way beyond what anybody expected. I read the other day, 20% of the hotel rooms in New York City are occupied by illegals.
Yeah,
That's a lot of hotels. And people, if you want to visit New York City, you can't find a room. And the prices are exorbitant because the government's paying for it. And they're taking over the schools. They're taking over the parks. The people, I think even the people in New York City, is way out left that they are. Maybe it's hurting them enough that they're going to begin to see the change. We'll see. But these people are hurting, but it's their own fault. They voted for these people.
Well, I also heard, and I don't understand how it gets in there, is the Social Security system is seen to be at risk because of all this. So I don't know if it's a Medicaid where non-citizens are getting a Medicaid payment or whatever, but that's really scary to us older people.
Well, if you go to the Social Security office, it's full of Hispanics, which I think are probably illegals. It's full of them. And they get Social Security.
And in addition to this, these people, these illegals, are being counted in the census, which means they're getting more representation in Congress for some of these Give Me programs.
Now, one of the towns, one of the fairly affluent towns in Massachusetts, is Norfolk. And Norfolk used to have a prison called Cedar Junction. And they're turning it over to be a shelter for illegals.
We have a Norfolk in Virginia, but we pronounce it Norfolk.
I know. It's Massachusetts. Everything gets strangely pronounced. But they had a town meeting, as New England does, last night to discuss this. And the local paper described it as raucous. This is a fairly affluent town. This is your mean cost of a house in Norfolk these days is probably slightly over $1 million. These people do not want this turned into a shelter for homeless people.
Not in my backyard.
You know, we're living in a relatively high military retiree area and whatever else. And of course, the VA administrative services is also being totally, totally overwhelmed because they're apparently a processing service for the illegals. I'm not sure exactly how it fits in. Not that the medical facilities or anything are being used for the illegals, but the processing is being done. I've heard griping about people just can't get to the phone or get anything
done. I haven't noticed it. I mean, I get my medical care from the VA, and I get emails about the VA and what they're doing. I haven't seen any of that.
Well, part of the money goes to these NGOs, these non-governmental organizations. For example, they reported in this article I read the other day that Catholic Charities received $2.4 billion, I'm talking about $1 billion, and they are facilitating the admission and movement of these people all over the country. Lutheran Services got $200 million. And this is taxpayer money now I'm talking about. This is, most of it's taxpayer. There was some of the contributions to the Catholic services were from private sources, but most of it is taxpayer money. So we are paying to fund these people to come into our country.
But that's federal taxpayer money, I believe. And we fought that a few years ago in Craven County because there was an incentive for various organizations to bring in the I'm not going to say illegals at that time, but
bring in
some refugees. And the incentive was they were getting a couple of $1,000 for each refugee they brought in. And once they brought them in, they dumped them on the county. Mm-hmm. The county had to provide the health services, the schooling, and all that stuff without any kind of funding there. And we were also made aware, trying to think of who it was, but made aware some of these are coming in with tuberculosis and what other medicals there were.
Measles at the Chicago airport.
Measles. Yeah. So we've faced this before.
But we don't take care of our own military veterans and we don't take care of our own homeless, but we want to put the red carpet out for illegals.
And if you take a look at, there is an economic theory or a theory of revolution, I don't know quite what it is, called Cloward-Piven, which says if you want to overthrow a government, you have to overload the system and bankrupt it so that people will accept anything you give them. And that's kind of what's going on here. I want to go real quick to something Glenn had about the school budget. Can we get started on that?
Go for it.
Yeah, well, last night I went to county commissioners meeting, and the budget hasn't been approved yet. That'll happen at the next session, but they've worked the budget, and they essentially feel like they have a final budget. And it does provide all the funds requested by the Craven County school system, which does include 5 social workers. Now, it was not specifically stated that these funds are for this purpose, but it basically covered their request that included 5 social workers. And so they're kind of going undercover of not specifically funding positions, but giving them the basket of money.
So these were positions that had been previously funded by a specific grant from the federal government, and now there's no more grant, so now we have to fund them within our own budget.
Yeah. So, and I think there was... we have 5 positions that they're trying to fund. Prior to ESSER funds, which was all about COVID, I don't know if they had 3 or maybe they didn't have any, so it's morphed.
So this is something that's been added after COVID, was done with COVID money, and now it's dumped on us.
Yeah.
And no one is saying that we don't need social workers or there's not a role for a social worker in a school. However, the roles that they're currently filling, like truancy, seems to me it should be a county issue because if it's a truancy issue, the problem is at home. Getting the student to the school. So that should be a county social worker issue, not a school social worker issue.
When I was a district attorney, I took a look at the truancy statutes and said, kid misses the first time, okay. Second time, you send the school notifies the DA, you send a certified letter, the parent has to come in. Third time, you prosecute the parent.
That would supposedly end the process.
Well, if the parent is the one that's got to get them to school, the only hammer you have is on the parent.
Yeah.
Make them go to school. I was warned, do not go down that road or you will have a civil war.
Okay.
Which goes to say a social worker's not going to solve the truancy problem.
Okay. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. This has been a great time. Again, we'll be right back.
Tor- Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Stop in at East 70 Point for great deals. Drew and his knowledgeable staff have been serving the New Bern area since 1989. We always try to help our customers with friendly and honest service. Our crew is what sets us apart. Treating folks like how we want to be treated is our standard. People appreciate great service plus great prices, and that's what we're all about. Our shop is like no other. We specialize in guns, jewelry, and ammo, but we have so much more. We have the largest selection of new and used firearms, coins, collectibles, musical instruments, and tools. Our new jewelry selection is growing daily. Find us at 3317 Highway 70 East of New Bern. We're open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., and Saturday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Also, check out our website for many, many collectibles, east70pawn.com. East 70 Pawn is your one-stop shop to buy, sell, trade, or cash loans quickly, conveniently, and confidentially.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Welcome back. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Mary, you wanted to take us in a different direction?
This week, there was an announcement of a ceasefire proposal involving Israel and Hamas. And when it was originally announced, it seemed like the Biden administration said that it was Israel's idea. But when you looked at it, that didn't work. And eventually, the truth started to come out that it was actually closer to Hamas's proposal than it was to Israel's. And then at the time it came out, Obama endorsed it, which gave you another clue as to...
Against Israel.
Yeah, who was behind it. And the peace ceasefire negotiation left Hamas in charge of Gaza, which is totally ridiculous. And they started out by saying, well, there's going to be a ceasefire for 6 weeks, total ceasefire for 6 weeks while we negotiate. Well, anyone who's been paying attention knows that anytime there's a ceasefire, Hamas rearms. And any humanitarian aid that goes into Gaza or Hamas does not go to the people. It goes to the military and to buy weapons and whatever. And this proposal was released on the evening of the Sabbath, which meant Israel was not going to respond for 24 hours because they don't do politics on their Sabbath day. So Netanyahu came out and was very tactful, which I think is kind of unusual for Netanyahu. And he said, the proposal that Biden presented is incomplete. There are gaps between the Israeli proposal and Biden's recounting of it. And I just want to comment, if you really want peace in the Middle East, you've got to deal with Iran, because Iran is funding Hezbollah, which is shooting rockets into northern Israel, and Hamas, which is shooting rockets into southern Israel.
And Egypt, who is aiding and abetting.
Yes, that's true. That's what all the tunnels were. That's why Egypt did not want them to go into southern Gaza, because they were going to expose the duplicity there. But the problem in the Middle East is Iran, and the Obama administration's plan for peace in the Middle East was to strengthen Iran, and that was going, and decrease the importance of Israel, and that was going to bring peace to the Middle East.
That was Obama's policy.
Yeah, that was Obama's policy, and Biden, for some reason, is following that policy. It didn't work then, and it isn't going to work now. So I just want to mention that it was not an Israeli proposal. It was not a good proposal, and all it was going to do was arm Hamas for another October 7th attack.
And to me, you talk about exposing the man behind the curtain in full view. I mean, that tells you who's running the policy over there. And there was no hiding that.
That was Biden.
No, I mean the Obama position.
And the thing that you brought up, Obama was seen at number 10.
Yes.
In England, seeing the prime minister.
I have two things I want to just add to this. Is first thing is I understand that there are two conservative members of Netanyahu's cabinet who have indicated that if he goes along with this, that they will take every effort they can to overthrow him.
And the Biden,
the conservatives in Israel do not want Netanyahu to fold at this point. That's the first thing. The second thing that troubled me was that part of this proposal had the United States committing to rebuilding Gaza. That's part of this proposal.
Yes, it is.
We can't make our, you know, we're going more and more into debt, and Biden's proposed, and why is he doing this? The votes in Michigan and these other places where he needs to get these Muslims voting for him. That's all this is about.
And at the same time, his administration is doing everything they can to push Netanyahu out of office. They are totally undermining the Netanyahu government.
Well, rebuilding Gaza would be on top of the $320 million we spent to build that stupid pier that just fell apart, washed up on the sand.
And all of the goods brought in on that pier were stolen.
By
also.
Hamas. Yes. Yep.
So let's move on. This past week was the celebration of 80 years since D-Day.
Tomorrow.
We have a couple of military veterans sitting at the table. Not World War II veterans. We're not that old.
Actually, technically, I am a World War II veteran. I'm allowed to join the Veterans of Foreign Wars because I was stationed in Berlin, and the peace treaty, the Soviets had never signed the peace treaty, so Berlin was still an occupied city from World War II. So I'm technically a World War II veteran.
You may be the last one.
I'm not 100 yet.
And likewise, I went into Berlin myself with the wall going up to the
right.
wall. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, when you think back, and I have not been to Normandy. I've been to, you know, the places here in this country, Gettysburg and the... you know, the big military cemeteries. When you see the sacrifice that so many of these young men made, where they gave up their entire lives, and then you look at what's happening in this country now, where we are allowing the Democrats to destroy what these people sacrificed their lives
for. Not just the Democrats.
I didn't say just the Democrats. I said we, you know, there are a variety of people that are doing it. I blame the Democrats first, but then there's probably some Republicans and unaffiliated that are part of it. I'm not saying that.
I don't think Republicans are using Air Force money to pay for drag shows.
No, absolutely.
But yes. When you look at some of the Mitch McConnell things that he's not done or allowed in foreign relations, it's an ideology, and it's the uniparty that I'm referring to. I'm not referring to the conservative Republican.
You know, we're in the situation now. We're sitting here, and we did talk about schools before, education process. But at least for most of the children in school now, history didn't start until the day they were born. They're not allowed to understand what D-Day means to us and what D-Day, to folks that have been around a little bit longer or understand that our parents would come back and they wouldn't talk about it. They would not talk about it.
I want to talk about leadership because it's something we don't have right now.
Oh, okay.
Dwight Eisenhower was the supreme leader, supreme commander of the Allied forces in Western Europe. And the responsibility for D-Day fell on his shoulders. He had to pick what day they were going and the whole thing. And there is a letter that he wrote in case it failed. And I just want to read that letter. Our landings in the Cherbourg-Havre area have failed to gain a satisfactory foothold, and I have withdrawn the troops. My decision to attack at this time and place was based upon the best information available. The troops, the air, and the Navy did all that bravery and devotion to duty could do. If any blame or fault attaches to this attempt, it is mine alone. That's leadership. That says, I made a decision, and if it goes bad, I'm going to take responsibility. When was the last time we had a leader like that?
Reagan. Didn't he say the buck stops here?
Yeah, that was Truman.
Truman, well.
I think a real serious problem we're having in our military right now is the degree to which, instead of focusing on building the strongest, most lethal military in the world, which is what a military is for, we have all these CRT, DEI objectives. They come out and they say, well, we feel good about our military now because we're more diverse than we've ever been. A military is not supposed to be diverse. It's supposed to be unified. Yeah. That's why they call it, you wear a uniform. And the other thing, and I really think this is something where we went astray, again, for diversity. Women in combat. That is the most ridiculous thing in the world. You take 100 men trained to fight infantry now, and you take 100 women, put them over here, give them the same training, which they don't. They do not require the same, to pass the same tests, physically or, you know, endurance-wise, and I'll tell you, the men are going to win every time. That's just the way it is. It's just like women in men's sports. There are things that women can do, and there's roles in the military, pilots and other things that they can equally do with men. But the common foot soldier and so on,
it just
undermines our military.
That after 22 years in the Air Force as a woman, I don't think women belong in combat roles. And in a lot of ways, I don't think the women belong in the military at all. It damages unit cohesion. When you put a woman in there, all the men are competing for the woman's attention. And you no longer have men's camaraderie. You have a sexual tension situation that does not build unit cohesion. And there is no way that a woman can drag a guy off, you know, her fallen comrade off the field. She can't pick him up. She can't deadlift him and haul him off. Somebody challenged me when I was teaching at ECU, and she says, well, how did you come to that conclusion that women don't belong in the service? And I said, 22 years of service, and that kind of shut her up.
Yeah.
But I can say that I'm glad I went in. I had the experiences I had, but what I observed myself is women don't belong there.
And I think some of the technical roles, yes, some of the technical roles, women are great at doing some of the technical roles back here in the States or whatever, don't deploy them on ships or whatever else. But folks, that's the end of our time. Thank you for staying with the CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.